The hour of 10:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee. Members, we have the Higher Education Omnibus Bill before us today. I'm going to have nonpartisan staff walk through the spreadsheet and the DE2 amendment. So, members, with that, I'm going to have Ken Savory walk through the spreadsheet. So, members, you have the spreadsheet with you, and for those in the audience, there should be a spreadsheet available. So, Mr. Savory, walk us through the spreadsheet.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, for the tape, Ken Savory, nonpartisan staff, House Fiscal. You have in your packet, members, a spreadsheet with the timestamp of 3/27/23 at the time of 10:21 a.m. Sure. There are several columns just as a housekeeping item. We'll be talking today from column N, column O, column double O, column P, column Q, and column double Q. Those are the DE amendment columns that contain both the House difference from base and the DE amendment from percentage change from base in both FY24-25 and the TAILS 26-27. The first line item that is a change is line 7. That is the state grant program. That is a $38,837,000 change in FY24 and a $28,260,000 change in FY26-27. The next change is on line 14, which is the tribal college supplemental assistance grants. This is an increase and rider language change of $6 million in FY24-25 and the identical amount in FY26-27. Going down on line 15 is the ICAP program, or Intervention for College Attendance. That's a $800,000 one-time increase only in 24-25. Moving down further, line 21 is the MinLink Gateway and Minitex program. That was a governor's change item at $1,350,000, and then an increase in the TAILS of $1,553,000. Moving down to the next line is line 22, the SLEDS program. That is a $1,536,000 increase over 24-25 base, and a similar increase of $1.5,036,000 in the TAILS. Moving down further, line 27 is the dual training competency grants, the component that goes to OHE. This was a revised recommendation from the governor, and the DE does a little bit different approach. The increase is $5,264,000, with the majority of it being in the first year in FY24. And then in the TAILS, the increase is $1,264,000. Additionally, the line below it lists a carve-out, so of that amount, $132,000 will be transferred to DLI, or the Department of Labor and Industry, per year. Moving down further, line 31, emergency assistance for post-secondary students, an increase above base of $5,708,000, and then an increase in the TAILS of $5,214,000. Line 32, the next several are teaching programs. Line 32, grants to teaching candidates from shortage areas. This is a $7 million increase in 24-25 and the identical increase in the TAILS. Line 33, underrepresented teacher candidate grants. $3 million increase in FY24-25 and a $3 million increase in the TAILS as well. Line 34, teacher shortage loan forgiveness repayment. A $6 million increase in 24-25 and a $6 million increase in 26-27. There are several items that remain the same at base, so we'll skip down to the line 43, the fostering independence grants. This is a base increase of $1.1 million and then an additional base increase of $1,300,000 in 26-27. Moving down further, line 49, the Student Parent Support Initiative. This is an increase of $8,425,000 and then in 24-25 and then an increase of $7 million in 26 and 27 combined. Line 51, the Director for Tribal Relations, Public Engagement. This is the governor's change item and is funded identically with $277,000 in 24-25 and then $286,000 in 26-27. Line 52, the Direct Admissions Minnesota Program, an $850,000 increase in 24-25 and the identical increase in 26-27. Line 53, the Minnesota American Indian Scholarships Program, is a $17 million new program in 24-25 and the same amount in 26-27. Line 54, the Next Generation Nursing Assistance Training Program, is a $3 million increase in 24-25 and then the same $3 million in 26-27. Line 57 is the Inclusive Higher Education Program, $2 million for the new program in 24-25, and then $2 million in 26 and 27. And that covers the first page. We can flip to the next. We'll start at the top again with line 59, which is the Addiction Medicine Fellowship. This is a new base appropriation of $540,000 in 24-25 and the identical amount in 26 and 27. Line 60 is the Allied Health Technicians Program. This is the one-time appropriation solely occurring in FY24-25 of $5,380,000. Line 61, this is an item from House File 20, the UI reimbursement that the committee heard. That is $990,000 in FY24-25 and then $990,000 in the tails. Line 62, the Foster Care Grant. This is a new item at $1 million in FY24-25. It's split equally between the 2 years, and it is one time. Line 63 is the last item for OHE. It is the agency administration appropriation. This is an increase of $4,214,000. And then an addition, and then in 24-25, and then $3,184,000 in 26-27. The next lines 68 through 97, are simply the changes from base to new programs. Those have been covered in the above lines, but that is a snapshot of what was changing from OHE. Line 102 is the total appropriation for the Office of Higher Education. For 24-25, that is $669,413,000, which is a base increase of $124,021,000 in FY24-25, and the increase in 26 and 27 is $95,977,000. Mr. Chair, that concludes OHE. We can move down to Minnesota State. Flipping a page over, the first change to Minnesota State is to the Workforce Development Scholarships within Operations and Maintenance. The DE has $12.5 million as the increase for that program in 24-25, and then and then in the tails is a one-time appropriation. Moving down is line 116 is the ISRS Next Generation. That is a $3 million increase from base. And then in FY24-25, and then a $2.2 million increase from base in 26-27. The rider language is slightly different in that it includes system-wide technology. Line 117 is the Z Degree Textbook Program, or Open Educational Resources Appropriation. That is a $2 million increase from base in FY24-25. And then that returns to the base appropriation in the tail, so that increases a one-time increase. Line 120 is a one-time appropriation occurring solely in FY24 for $50 million for campus one-time support. Line 121 is an appropriation for a tuition freeze at Minnesota State. It occurs at $25 million in FY24. $50 million in FY25 and continues into the tails. So $75 million increase and then a $100 million increase in the tails. And there's language within the D that specifies that particular amount of money. Line 122 is the student support appropriation, which is $26 million in FY24-25, and a $4 million increase in FY26-27. So the tails do go down. Line 123 is the individual retirement account plan contribution increase. Total appropriations for that purpose are $1,733,000, and then in the tails it is $1,777,000. Moving down further to line 25, our equipment and learning environments appropriations, that totals $25 million, and that is a one-time appropriation. Line 126 is the develop and expand industry-specific programming at Minnesota State. That is a $12.5 million appropriation. It occurs one time. And then finally, line 127, similar to the OHE appropriation for the same purpose, are UI reimbursement dollars totaling $1,618,000, and the same amount occurs in FY26-27. I want to point out to members one item that was not included as a rider, which is line 131. This is a general increase for Minnesota State stabilization. So this is a general increase to the operations and maintenance. That is $122 million in FY24-25. And then that amount changes to $93,800,000 in FY26-27. Mr. Chair, moving down to line 154 is the Minnesota State total. The total above base appropriation for Minnesota State is $333,351,000 in FY24-25, and then $203,395,000 in FY26-27. Mr. Chair, we can move down to the University of Minnesota. And beginning on line 171 is changes to the core mission support. This is the overall appropriation for operations and maintenance. So line 171 is $135 million increase. And then in FY24-25 and in the tails, it is $145 million in the tails. Additionally, line 172, there are dollars included for enrollment tuition shortfall that the committee heard. And that is a $48 million one-time appropriation. Line 173, there's dollars included for system-wide safety and security. That is $5 million per fiscal year in 24-25, and that amount reduces to $2 million a year in FY26-27. And then line 174, the same item for UI reimbursement, but for the University of Minnesota, at $366,000 per year. Every year, including the tails. Mr. Chair, all told, line 189 is the general fund appropriation to the U of M, which is $193,732,000 above base. And then in the tails, it is $149,732,000 above the base for the tails. Additionally, pointing out to members, line 191, these are dollars from the Healthcare Access Fund. This appropriation remains at base. And Mr. Chair, our last couple of items are line 202, which is the Mayo Family Medicine Residency Program. Mayo has two programs, and one of them is changing. This is an increase to that program at $896,000 in FY24-25, and then the same identical amount in 26-27. Mr. Chair, via the Ways and Means Budget Resolution, the committee's target was $650 million above base. That is expressed on line 214. You'll see in column O, the committee is $650 million above the base, so the committee has hit that particular target. And then additionally, in FY26-27, the committee has also spent $450 million above the base in the tails, which is column Q. And just one final housekeeping item. If you would turn the page over, this is a balanced track sheet, line 221 to line 236. This tracks the various transfers that occur between the general fund and the special revenue fund. There are several items at the Office of Higher Education that have their own special revenue fund accounts. So that just shows the flow of money from the general fund to the special revenue fund for the various handful of items that are included there. And Mr. Chair, that concludes the spreadsheet, the walkthrough.
All right. Mr. Hopkins, can you walk us through the DE amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, this is Nathan Hopkins from House Research Department. I'll be going through the DE2 amendment that is in members' packets. Article 1 contains the appropriations. Article 2 contains policy items, changes. I'll go through really just highlighting some of the changes in Article 1, especially rider language changes. So on at the very bottom of page 1 of the DE, the state grants appropriation, so this is this has an increase of just over $38 million above base for the biennium. There's no new rider language here. Page 2 to page 3, the Tribal College Supplemental Assistant Grants. So this is $6 million above base for the biennium. The increase in funding pays for a grant of $3 million each to the tribal colleges to support their general operations and maintenance. Reports are also required on those grants. And you can see that in rider language in the paragraph B that begins on page 3.3. Next, also on page 3, the Intervention for College Attendance Program, or ICAP grants. This appropriation is $800,000 above base for the biennium. The above base funding is isolated to fiscal year 24 and therefore does not create a new base for this item. The fiscal year 24 funding includes $300,000 for competitive funding to post-secondary institutions to support students who were formerly incarcerated. The additional increase is to fill in for federal COVID funding that has been going to this program and which will be expiring. Next, on page 4 of the DE, subdivision 15, the MinLink appropriation. This is $1.35 million above base for the biennium. The increased funding is for expanding access to databases that support nursing programs. Note that this appropriation also specifies a new base for fiscal years 26 and 27. Subdivision 16 is the SLEDS appropriation. This is the statewide longitudinal education data system. This is $1.536 million above base for the biennium. The increased funding will be used to maintain and improve the system. Next, if you turn to page 6 of the DE, subdivision 21, dual training competency grants. This has an increase of $5.264 million above base for the biennium. The increase in funding will be used to support expanded occupation fields for the program, which is contained, that change is contained in Article 2 of the bill. It's adding transportation and child care to the list of occupations that qualify for grants under this program. On page 7, subdivision 24, emergency assistance for post-secondary students. So this appropriation is $5.708 million above base for the biennium. The increase will be used to expand the program and compensate for the loss of federal COVID-19 pandemic funding that was also used to support these grants. This appropriation down on paragraph D at 7.27 also specifies a new base for fiscal year 26 and later. At the bottom of page 7 of the DE, subdivision 25, grants to student teachers in shortage areas. Actually, these next three subdivisions are all teacher support programs. Subdivision 25, the shortage areas, this is $7 million above base for the biennium. All of these increases are going to be used to allow the program to provide grants to more eligible students. Subdivision 26 on page 8, grants to underrepresented student teachers, it's $3 million above base for the biennium. Subdivision 27, the teacher shortage loan repayment program. And this is $6 million above base for the biennium. The next change in Article 1 is on page 10 of the DE. This is a change to the Fostering Independence Higher Education Grant Program. There's an increase in spending. It's $1.1 million above base for the biennium. The increase will allow the program to provide grants to more eligible students. This language also specifies a new base for fiscal year 26 and later. Also on page 10, We're getting to some new rider language now, some new programs. Subdivision 38, the Student Parent Support Initiative. So this appropriates $4.425 million in fiscal year 24 and $4 million in fiscal year 25 in new funding for grants to post-secondary institutions and partner entities to assist students who are expectant parents and parents of young children. Subdivision 39, this is the Director of Tribal Relations for the Office of Higher Education. It appropriates $135,000 in fiscal year 24, $143,000 in fiscal year 25, and new funding for that position within OHE. Subdivision 40, the Direct Admissions Program. This is $850,000 above base for the biennium. This had previously been a pilot program, and it's made permanent in Article 2 of the bill. Subdivision 41, American Indian Scholars. This appropriates $8.5 million per year in new funding to provide full tuition and fee waivers for certain American Indian students at Minnesota public post-secondary institutions. And that program language is in Article 2. Subdivision 42, the Next Generation Nursing Initiative. This appropriates $1.5 million per year in new funding for transfer to Minn State to administer the Next Generation Nursing Assistant Training Program. This program was launched in December of 21 and was originally supported with federal COVID relief funding. Subdivision 43 on page 11, the Child Development Associate Pathway. This is new one-time funding of $475,000 in fiscal year 24 for transfer to Minn State to help Child Development Associate credential holders earn academic credit towards a related certificate, diploma, or degree. On page 12, subdivision 44, this is new one-time funding of $75,000 in fiscal year 24 to conduct a feasibility study on a state service initiative. A report to the legislature is also required. Subdivision 45, Inclusive Higher Education. This appropriates $1 million in new funding for the inclusive higher education programming that's in Article 2, Sections 2 and 3 of the bill. You can see in the rider language, it's divided with $250,000 per year going to the Office of Higher Education to establish the Technical Assistance Center, and $750,000 per year going to the grants under this new program. Subdivision 46 on page 12. This is new one-time funding for the Paramedic Scholarship Program. It's $3.2 million in fiscal year 24. Subdivision 47, this is the funding for the Addiction Medicine Graduate Fellowship at Hennepin County Medical Center. So this appropriates $270,000 per year for a grant to HCMC to support six addiction medicine fellows. Subdivision 48 is on page 14. And this is new one-time funding for the Allied Health Technician Scholarship Program. It's at it's $5.38 million in fiscal year 24. Subdivision 49 on page 14. This is unemployment insurance aid. So it appropriates $495,000 per year in new funding for unemployment insurance aid that will go to the tribal colleges. The committee will call House File 20. Makes more higher education employees eligible for unemployment insurance between academic terms. The DE doesn't contain those major policy changes, but it does contain the appropriations that help fund tribal colleges, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and the University of Minnesota to help compensate for the additional unemployment insurance that will be going towards their employees. Subdivision 51, Agency Administration. There's no change to the rider language here, but this is $4.214 million above base for the biennium. Moving on to the appropriations to Minnesota State, beginning on page 16 of the DE. The top line total appropriation, you can see on 16.20, it's an increase of $331.351 million as compared to the previous biennium. Subdivision 3 contains the operations and maintenance appropriation, which carries that entire increase. And just to go through the changes in some of the rider language. So paragraph A on page 16, this is dedicating $25 million in fiscal year 24 and $50 million in fiscal year 25 of new funding to student tuition relief. And this also requires a tuition freeze for undergraduate degree granting programs over the next two academic years. So this paragraph A is the tuition freeze language. Paragraph B, which is on page 17, this dedicates $50 million in fiscal year 24 of new one-time funding for campus support. And that money has to be allocated according to the rider language based on estimated tuition revenue loss for each campus due to enrollment declines. Turning to page 18, so rider paragraph E for operations and maintenance. This is the workforce development scholarship rider. This is just $12.5 million above base for the biennium. Also on page 18, paragraph H. So this is the ISRS record system, next gen record system upgrade rider. It's $3 million above base for the biennium, and the rider language has also been expanded so that it can be the money can be used to support other enterprise-wide technology services. On page 19, rider paragraph I, this is the Z degree rider paragraph. It's $2 million above base for the biennium, and it's also been expanded to include support for all kinds of open educational resources, open textbooks, as well as implementation of that Z degree program. And this specifies a base for this rider of $50 million for fiscal year 26 and later, or sorry, $50,000. Paragraph J on page 19, this dedicates $13 million per year in new funding for student support, which may be spent for these specified purposes in the rider. It specifies a base of $2 million in fiscal year 26 and later, so this is a new rider paragraph. Paragraph K on page 19, this is another new rider paragraph. This dedicates $12.5 million per year in one-time funding for upgrades to equipment and learning environments. It also requires that the fiscal year 25 appropriation be matched from non-state sources. Turning to page 20, paragraph L. This is another new rider paragraph. It dedicates $6.255 million per year in one-time funding for expansion of industry sector programming and work-based learning experiences. It also requires the fiscal year 25 appropriation to be matched from non-state sources. Paragraph M on page 20, dedicates $861,000 in fiscal year 24, $872,000 in fiscal year 25. In new funding for increased employer contribution rates for retirement accounts, and the policy language is contained in Article 2 of the bill. Paragraph N, this is the unemployment insurance aid rider for MnState. So it's $809,000 per year for unemployment insurance aid. Finally, paragraph O specifies the operations and maintenance base for the TAILS. Moving on to the University of Minnesota, that begins on page 21 of the DE. The top line number is on 21.4. This is a $193.732 million above, this is $193.732 million above base for the biennium. All of that increase is contained within the operations and maintenance appropriation on 21.12. The only new riders within the operations and maintenance language for the University of Minnesota are on page 22. Rider paragraph E, beginning on 22.13, dedicates $5 million per year in new funding to system-wide safety and security and specifies a base of $2 million in fiscal year 26 and later. And rider paragraph F is the unemployment insurance aid appropriation for the University of Minnesota. Turning all the way to page 27. So this shows the changes for the Mayo Clinic's appropriation. It is $896,000 above base for the biennium. All of that is contained within subdivision 3 on 27.19, the Family Practice and Graduate Residency Program appropriation. This increases to support the Mankato Residency Program, which was recently acquired by the Mayo Clinic, and it increases funding for the pre-existing Rochester program. Mr. Chair, that concludes Article 1. Article 2, beginning on page 27, has the policy items that are changed or updated or added in the DE amendment. Section 1 on page 27 is the American Indian Scholars Program. This establishes a new statutory program to provide tuition and fee-free undergraduate education to American Indian students at public post-secondary institutions. On page 29, section 2, this is the first of two sections regarding inclusive higher education. This section is about the establishment of the Inclusive Higher Education Technical Assistance Center. Section 3 begins on page 32. And this is the second part of the Inclusive Higher Education package, and this is the Inclusive Higher Education Grant Program. On page 35, section 4, this affects the state grant program. It changes the assigned family responsibility. It amends the definition of the assigned family responsibility to conform to changes in federal student aid calculations and allows the Office of Higher Education to adjust the assigned family responsibility to reflect part-time enrollment. Also on the very bottom of page 35, section 5, this amends the definition of student for purposes of state financial aid programs to include any enrollments of one credit per term or more. Section 6 on page 36 of the DE, this is a change to the state grant program. On 36.8, you see the living and miscellaneous expense allowance increased from 109% to 115% of the federal poverty guidelines for a one-person household in Minnesota for 9 months. So this will have the effect of increasing state grant awards. This section also makes a clarifying change regarding proration of awards for less than full-time enrollments. Section 7, at the bottom of page 36, this also is a state grant program change. It amends the cap on state grant awards from 8 full-time semesters to 180 total credits. On page 37, section 8, another change to the state grant program. This extends the deadline for state grant applications. On page 37 and 38, sections 9 and 10, this is just making some technical adjustments to conform to changes in federal student aid calculations for both the fostering independence grants and the child care grants. Section 11 on page 39 of the DE. This is the new Student Parent Support Initiative. So this establishes a new statutory program to provide grants to post-secondary institutions and other applicants to support expectant parents and parents of young children. On page 40 and 41, sections 12 and 13, both of these sections also make technical adjustments to conform to changes in the federal student aid calculations. On page 42, section 14, this is a change to the Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program. It will prioritize applicants whose eligibility is based on race or ethnicity, and it allows other eligibility categories, i.e. rural school districts or teaching in a licensed shortage area, to receive remaining funds. Beginning on page 42, going on to page 43, sections 15 through 18, these are all changes to the Dual Training Competency Grant Program. Section 15 adds to, on page 42, section 15 adds to the cost of training recommended books and materials in addition to required books and materials. Section 16, this adds to the criteria for evaluating grant applications, the employer's ability to recruit and retain employees of color, American Indian employees, and employees with disabilities. Section 17 on page 43, this clarifies that a large employee must pay 25% of the cost of employee training. Section 18 on page 43, this is the last of these changes to the Dual Training Competency Grant Program. This allows employers to use up to 10% of the grant to pay for employees' training supports, and it clarifies the per employee maximum grant amount. Turning to page 44, section 19, this is the new direct admissions program. This is the program that had been a pilot and is now being made permanent. So this establishes in statute the program to provide qualifying Minnesota high school seniors automatic conditional admission to public colleges and universities. Page 44, section 20. This is really just making a conforming change regarding the Minn State Board of Trustee appointment process. In the repealer, which is at the very end of this article, it repeals the Trustee Candidate Advisory Council. So this is a conforming change, eliminating a reference to that repealed statute. Staying on page 44, moving on, and from page 44 to page 46, sections 21 to 23, these will all be changes to Minnesota State's Workforce Development Scholarship Program. Section 21, this is adding construction, education, and public safety to the program areas eligible for a workforce development scholarship. It is expanding the scholarship program to include students enrolled in their first and second years at state universities, and it expands the scholarship program to include students enrolled in certificate programs who may receive awards up to $1,500. Section 22, this is again a change to the Workforce Development Scholarship Program. It increases the total lifetime award cap on scholarships from $7,500 to $12,000 per student. Section 23, at the bottom of page 45, going on to page 46, this puts in statute an allowance of up to 1.5% of program funds to be used for administering the program. Section 24 on page 46 of the DE. This is another change to the dual training competency grant program. This is probably the most substantial change to the program. This adds transportation and childcare to the list of occupations eligible for grants. Section 25 on page 46. This increases the employer contribution rate for individual retirement account plans or IRAP plans to 8.75%. And that will then equal the employer contribution rate for the Teachers Retirement Association plan. Both of those plans are plans that Minn State employees could be members of. On page 46, still, section 26, this is the paramedic scholarship program. On page 47, at the bottom, section 27 is the Allied Health Technician Scholarship Program. Since the committee last heard this bill, one change that was made to it at 48.13, the affidavit that an applicant is required to submit must affirm the student's intent to work in Minnesota in the specified health technician field following graduation. So in Minnesota was added. Page 49, section 28. This requires annual reports to the legislature on unemployment insurance aid. So that would come from the Office of Higher Education, Minnesota State, and the University of Minnesota, each of which receives support for unemployment insurance aid in the appropriation section of the bill. Section 29 on page 49, higher education bonding policy. So this states an intention of the legislature not to require public post-secondary systems to pay for portions of their bonding projects. This is the one-third, two-third user financing issue that has been discussed in committee. And section 30, finally, is the repealer. This repeals the Minn State Trustee Advisory Council, which has not been active since 2012. And it also repeals a subdivision of the Workforce Development Scholarship Statute that sets award amounts. Those award amounts are now controlled under new language in the bill, Article 2, Section 21. Mr. Chair, that concludes a walkthrough of the DE amendment. I'm happy to take any member questions.
All right. I'm going to move to testimony on the DE amendment. I'm going to call the individual who is coming up first and then alert the individual who's coming up second. Remember, we are on a timeline here, so I would hope that the individuals would be brief and specific to the DE2. First on the agenda is Dennis Olson, and then second is Myron Franz. So those two would come down, and Commissioner Olson, you're first. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Vice Chair Wolgamont, members. For the record, my name is Dennis Olson, proud to serve as the Commissioner of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to share just a few brief comments in support of the Higher Education Omnibus Bill, House File 2073, the DE2, on behalf of the Office of Higher Education. We would like to thank the committee for working to incorporate most of the governor's budget recommendations into the bill. We especially appreciate the recognition that targeted supports and investments and financial aid modifications that improve programs like the Minnesota State Grant are the exact responses we need at a time when our students and our institutions continue to recover from the impacts of the pandemic. We appreciate that you are seeking to provide additional support for the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota State System with your budget target to align with the governor's recommendation to support operations and maintenance requests of both systems, as well as providing additional student support services. We heard numerous times from students, faculty, and administrators about the significant needs on campuses, especially related to student basic needs. And the proposed investments in this bill address student needs and will help campus leaders and faculty continue to provide students with a world-class education. We appreciate your continued support, Mr. Chair, and members of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education and the critical programs we manage on behalf of Minnesota students. A few quick highlights include the Minnesota State Grant that I'd mentioned before, your recommended investment of nearly $39 million over the base will allow the Minnesota State Grant to continue to help nearly 70,000 low and middle income students attend college of their choice. Your recommended increase to 115% of the federal poverty guideline to the living and miscellaneous expense is especially beneficial for low-income students and families, allowing students to address additional costs of college outside of tuition. And your recommended investments to conform to the federal FAFSA changes will position the state to continue to provide strong and sustainable state grants to students. Finally, Mr. Chair, thank you for incorporating additional funding for dual training grants and for providing funds necessary to add two new critical industry areas for eligibility. This investment provides greater opportunities for students looking for training in an in-demand career and allows greater connections between employees and employers in the state. We also thank you for the support for new initiatives such as the Minnesota American Indian Scholars Program, the Student Parent Initiative, operations funding for tribal colleges, and continued funding to further build out Direct Admissions Minnesota. Mr. Chair, we know there are still items that need to be worked through. We look forward to working with the committee and other stakeholders as the bill continues to move through the process to create the absolute best bill for Minnesota students during the conference process. Again, our agency thanks you for the great work, working relationship that we have had with you, with members, and with staff, of course. That concludes my testimony, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Olson, thank you, and we appreciate all of your work over the last few days in helping us put this DE2 amendment together.
Thank you.
Mr. Franz, you're next, and then Jen Chernega is also following Myron Franz. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Myron Franz. I'm the Senior Vice President for Finance and Operations at the University of Minnesota. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee and the talented staff members that you have in putting this bill together. We appreciate the process we've been through with the listening, the engaging, the questioning. This process really helped us at the university provide this committee with our recommendations for the future of the University of Minnesota. I want to thank the University of Minnesota Board of Regents, President Gable, and our talented students and dedicated faculty and staff for all they do every day at the university on behalf of the state of Minnesota. Collectively, we appreciate your support and your understanding of the issues and challenges that we face. We particularly appreciate the recognition of our core mission in terms of the importance of maintaining that going forward, the tuition shortfall that we brought to your attention. We appreciate the response to that, and also clearly to the public safety items that we've talked about. Thank you for your support. We understand the fiscal challenges that came with the committee's target and with a reduced target for the following biennium. I appreciate that as much as anyone, I think, and I, of course, must say we would appreciate the full ask, but we understand the challenges that the committee faced with their targets, and we appreciate the way that the committee addressed those challenges, and we look forward, as Commissioner Olson said, we look forward to this process going forward to continue to provide access and information that you request when you request it to make sure that this conference committee process works as well as it can. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, for your support.
Thank you. Senior Vice President Franz, and we appreciate your help, too, in working on the DE2 amendment. President Chernega, and then Mark Grant is after President Chernega. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Chair Pawlowski, members of the committee, my name is Jenna Chernega. I'm the president of the Interfaculty Organization. We're the bargaining unit that represents the teaching faculty, coaches, counselors, and librarians across the 7 universities in the MnState system. Mr. Chair, 3 times you've chaired this committee, and 3 times we've had historic investments in public higher education. I'm here today to thank you for those historic investments and specifically for this particular bill. I especially appreciate the campus support that has been given that recognizes the ways that our campuses have been struggling through the pandemic with enrollment declines outside of our control, and the way that the money has been structured to provide that immediate care, that immediate influx of funds so that campuses can rebuild. I'm also appreciative of the IRAP equity portion of the bill that provides the money to bring our IRAP members up to parity with their TRA counterparts. I'd like to thank you as well for the fully funded tuition freeze that supports our students and college affordability in a way that makes it possible on our campuses to support every student. This is a chance for our system, our campuses, and our faculty to catch our breath, to deliberate, and to rebuild so that we're ready to serve every student in the state of Minnesota in the years going forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Grant, you're next, and then it's Myra Asif, the student who is after you. So.
Excellent. Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Pawlowski, Vice Chair Walgamott, committee members, for the record. My name is Mark Grant. I am a 25-year communication studies faculty member at Dakota County Technical College, and I currently help direct the governmental relations work on behalf of Minnesota State College faculty. MSCF is the union that represents nearly 4,000 instructors, counselors, and librarians at 27 colleges on 47 campuses across Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to speak briefly today on the DE2 amendment. First off, I want to thank the chair and the committee for their hard work this session. I have been to almost every hearing since the start of session, and I have seen legislators committed to understanding the landscape of public higher education and deeply appreciative of the impact that we have on the students, communities, and economy of Minnesota. I've heard from my faculty members of your willingness to meet with them and listen to their experiences from campuses in every corner of the state. I also want to extend my gratitude to Minnesota State, the IFO, Students United, and LEAD-MN for their leadership this session. Several factors have to coalesce to result in a bill like this. Many of them are out of our control, but our shared commitment to doing what's best for our campuses and students, I believe, contributed to this outcome. Provisions contained in this bill will have an immediate impact on our campuses, students, and faculty. It also contains a level of investment that will be felt for years to come. With this bill, you have taken a step to returning to the statutory levels of 2/3, 1/3 funding for state higher ed, a level of funding that I enjoyed when I attended Minnesota State University Mankato years and years and years and years ago. You've given campus budgets some breathing room. You've walked a few of them back from the cliff. You've given programs the resources they need to invest in their classrooms, their labs, and their shops. You've given students much needed tuition relief, and you've sent a message to the faculty of Minnesota State Colleges that their work is important and worth investing in. MSCF strongly supports House File 2073 and the DE2 amendment, and thank you.
All right, Yusuf is next, and then Paul Spies. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Chair Pawlowski, Ranking Member O'Neill, and esteemed members of the committee. For the record, my name is Marwa Asif, and I want to express my heartfelt gratitude for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of Students United, but more importantly, as a student. I'm currently an undergraduate at St. Cloud State University, and together with Students United, represent 55,000 students enrolled in the 7 Minnesota State System universities. I understand that you face tough decisions regarding investments with this record surplus. In this context, I implore you to consider the plight of college students. We are grappling not only with high tuition fees, but also food insecurity, mental health challenges, and limited access to essential resources needed. And as you weigh your options, I urge you to prioritize policies that promote affordability, basic needs, and civic engagement among students. These are what we call the ABCs. As an organization that is the front line for students, we have been advocating for the ABC since the start of the legislative session. These policies aim to address the critical needs of students across Minnesota. We appreciate your hard work in putting together this omnibus bill that includes vital funding for the emergency assistance grant, increasing the living and miscellaneous expenses portion of the state grant program, and resources devoted to the state's hunger-free campus gap program. We are also grateful for the commitment to providing 24/7 mental health resources to students. The cost of higher education has been skyrocketing over the past decade and making it challenging for students to afford a quality education. This is why we support the tuition freeze included in this bill. It's time to prioritize students, and as Chair Pawlowski has said, not view us solely as revenue generators. The tuition freeze is an essential step to making higher education affordable and accessible for everyone. Coupled with other investments in this bill, it helps protect students' financial stability while giving our campuses the stability they need. We appreciate the hard work and dedication of Chair Pawlowski and the members of this committee in shaping this omnibus bill. Now, more than ever, we need to invest in our students to create a better future for not just us, but for all Minnesotans. We look forward to working with you to continue shaping the bill and ensuring that students can thrive and become the next generation of Minnesota's leaders and workers. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Spies and then Linda Sloan.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Paul Spies with the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. There's a wide opportunity gap in our schools that reflects the higher education attainment gaps that exist in our state. The ratio of white teachers to students is 1-9, while the ratio of BIPOC teachers to students is 1-90. 1-90. One reason for this gap is metaphorically, previous legislatures have used garden hoses versus a large-scale irrigation system to grow BIPOC teachers in the state. I have one statement of thanks, one strong concern, and one suggestion for a more impactful investment that won't change your overall bottom line in the budget. First of all, I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chair, for your $3 million investment in the underrepresented student teacher grant that meets our coalition's request in House File 381. Student teaching for 3 months or more without pay is the biggest financial barrier to licensure and the profession. The most recent total of BIPOC teacher prep program completers in Minnesota equals 378, and your total appropriation will support approximately 333, or 88% of all BIPOC student teachers. Thank you. However, we're very concerned that this bill doesn't invest nor codify the aspiring Teachers of Color Scholarship Program as proposed in the Increased Teacher of Color Act. There are 2,100 BIPOC teacher candidates who represent 17% of all teacher candidates in the state, and proposing in our Increased Teacher of Color Act $18 million per fiscal year for their support. Given our historic surplus, not investing in this program is a major missed opportunity. However, my strong suggestion would be that you divert the $6 million for teacher shortage loan forgiveness program to the Aspiring Teacher of Color Scholarship Program. That will give you more bang for your buck and more return on your investment. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Sloan is next, and then Andrew Morris. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Pawlowski and members. My name is Linda Sloan, and I'm the Executive Director at the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. As you know, the Increased Teachers of Color Act has been the top joint priority in the education of the state's three ethnic councils and the Indian Affairs Council since it was first proposed in 2017. While we are grateful for some investments in various grant programs in previous legislative sessions, the continued underfunding of the Increased Teachers of Color Act has contributed to the severe shortage of BIPOC teachers in our state. We greatly appreciate your increased investment of the $3 million over the biennium for underrepresented student teacher grants. But frankly, again, as you've probably heard earlier, we are very disappointed that no investments are made in this bill for the Aspiring Teachers of Color Scholarship Program when there's been $18.5 million requested and the state has the money. We have a historic surplus. Even partially funding this scholarship program to prevent student debt is a more impactful investment than the $6 million you plan to invest in the teachers' shortage loan repayment program. We, again, are asking you to reallocate at least $4 million of the planned increase for the loan repayment program to the aspiring Teachers of Color scholarship program instead. This change is much needed to start increasing the percentage of BIPOC teachers at least 2% per year. We call on the Higher Education Committee to include all the proposed investments in their omnibus bills as one of the top priorities in education of our councils, the ethnic councils, and our communities for this season. Thank you.
Thank you. Andrew Morris, and then Katya Zapitas.
Chair Pulaski and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andy Morris, and I serve as the Public Affairs and Legislative Liaison at the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. As our student population has grown increasingly diverse, the diversity of our teaching workforce has not kept pace. In the 6 years since the first Increase of Teachers of Color Act was introduced in 2017, the percentage of BIPOC students in Minnesota has increased from 30 to 37%, but the percentage of BIPOC teachers has only increased from 4 to 6%. The impact of the Increased Teachers of Color Act thus far has resulted in the state's more than 30 teacher preparation programs being more diverse than the current teacher workforce, with 11% of all program completers and 17% of all teacher candidates coming from BIPOC communities. Your investment in BIPOC student teachers will help remove the most significant barrier to licensure for approximately 330 individuals completing their programs. However, there are over 2,100 BIPOC teacher candidates who will not be supported with scholarships before student teaching, and they need your assistance. Supporting many more people from our four constituent communities to become teachers will help Minnesota close opportunity gaps, fill our workforce shortages, and help our state reach its higher education attainment goals. These investments will contribute to building and diversifying Minnesota's workforce in education and other sectors of the economy. Therefore, to optimize the state's investments and support students currently in the pipeline, we strongly recommend that you divert investments from the Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program to the Aspiring Teachers of Color Scholarship Program. On behalf of the Ethnic Councils and the Indian Affairs Council, we thank you for your leadership and urge you to do what is right for all students in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Katya Zapita, then Danny Eckert is next. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Katya Zapeda, and I serve as the Legislative and Policy Director in Education for the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. As state agencies, our important charge is to advise and inform state lawmakers about our constituent communities and their needs. Over the years, we continue to hear the same message across the state. We want to see ourselves reflected in our school systems by having more teachers of color and American Indian teachers. What message are we sending to our communities if we fail to fund programs needed to increase teachers of color? If we can't fully fund the Increased Teachers of Color Act now with the historic surplus and the trifecta of supportive leadership in House, Senate, and Governor, it's hard to imagine when we will ever be able to do so as needed. Consequently, the racial gap between students and teachers will continue to widen, and our state's wide opportunity and achievement gaps are among the worst in the country and will no close as soon as we need. We recognize that higher education systems need more general funding, but strategic funding is also needed for systemic change to increase the percentage of BIPOC teachers, which will increase BIPOC students in higher education. There will be many various returns on these modest investments. Thank you.
Thank you. Danny Eckert is next, and then Edward Reynoso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Danny Eckert, and I serve as the Director of State Government Relations for the Minnesota Hospital Association. MHA strongly supports multiple provisions in this bill across all the budget areas, but we specifically support a lot of provisions that support the needed development, recruitment, and retention of Minnesota's healthcare workforce. Specifically, MHA supports increased funding and changes to the Dual Training Competency Grants Program. Dual training grants are one of the most significant sources of state workforce development funding available to hospitals and health systems. allowing organizations to train the next generation of healthcare professionals across many high-demand patient care operations. The new and additional funding for the program also will help the Office of Higher Education meet current demand for the program across all eligible business sectors, not just healthcare. MHA also supports the included Allied Health Technician Scholarship Program. Allied Health Technicians are critical delivering direct patient care across all hospitals and health systems and in other healthcare settings. There are currently over 7,000 open Allied Health Technician jobs in Minnesota, and the Department of Employment and Economic Development estimates that this number will only continue to increase in coming years. So the scholarship program is a needed one-time investment to recruit the next generation of desperately needed allied health professionals in Minnesota. In addition to those two provisions, MHA supports funding for Minnesota State's workforce development scholarships and improvements for equipment and learning environments. MHA also supports the inclusion of funding for the Addiction Medicine Graduate Medical Education Fellowship Program at Hennepin County Medical Center. MHA is grateful to Chair Pulaski, Vice Chair Wolgamott, Representative O'Neill, and the entire committee for taking deliberate action in recognition of the serious nature of Minnesota's healthcare workforce shortage and its unique reliance and reliance on higher education. We encourage this committee to continue to strongly support dual training grants, allied health scholarships, and all other higher education programs that support the development, recruitment, and retention of Minnesota's healthcare workforce as this bill moves through the process. Thank you.
Thank you. Edward Reynoso is next, and then Jennifer Irwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand there's bonus points for rapidness. Thank you for the historic funding for the U of M, Minnesota State. It'll impact 2,300 Teamsters, and we appreciate it. UI reimbursement funding for higher ed, food and security funding, the many scholarship programs and grants, the IRAP contribution increase for our ASF members, funding for equipment and learning environments, and student support. We appreciate and thank you all.
Mr. Nelson, just identify yourself for the record.
I apologize. See how quick I was trying to be. Edward Reynoso, I represent Teamsters Local 320. Thank you.
Thank you. Jennifer and then Mary Hoff. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jennifer Irwin. I'm president of the Minn State Policy Committee and an OAS intermediate at Rochester Community and Technical College. Thank you for considering my comments today on the Omnibus Higher Education Finance Bill. I'd like to thank Chair Pulaski for assembling a bill that centers the viability of Minnesota State colleges and universities. For instance, fully funding the tuition freeze should aid in a Minnesota student's ability to afford a higher education. Expanding student support services on campuses will be an incredibly important piece of ensuring that students who enroll at Minnesota State schools will succeed. Fully funding the state stabilization for Minnesota State is vital for campuses to remain viable. And we appreciate the inclusion of the one-time support for campuses to help recoup the losses of the past 4 years due to low enrollment. We believe these appropriations, along with the proposal to directly admit Minnesota students automatically to public colleges and universities, will significantly improve enrollment levels and get us closer to being able to offer an affordable, sustainably resourced system for higher education. We appreciate the inclusion of some smaller items in the bill as well. For instance, including $5.2 million for ISRS NextGen will help as we transition away from our current IT system. ISRS is an incredibly challenging system to work with, and replacing it with something more seamless will be welcome for our staff that have to wrestle with it every day. We also appreciate the inclusion of the funding for the expansion of unemployment insurance to hourly seasonal higher education workers. Though it's a small cost item at $3.3 million per biennium, it will make an immeasurable difference in the lives of seasonal workers that can't always rely on an income in the summer. I know time is short, so I will finish here. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Hobbs is next. Welcome to the committee. And Paul Sert-Bennett is following her. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Pulaski and committee members. My name is Mary Hoff. I'm a parent advocate and co-leader of the Minnesota Inclusive Higher Education Consortium. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. On behalf of the consortium, the ARC Minnesota, Minnesota Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities, and the thousands of prospective college students with intellectual disabilities, thank you for including the provisions on inclusive higher education. The provisions open access to post-secondary education for students with intellectual disabilities throughout the state. Expanding inclusive higher education in Minnesota will widen the pathway to prosperity to over 5,000 Minnesotans with intellectual disabilities who have limited to no access to college today. This legislation is important because Minnesotans with an intellectual disability who go to college are able to attain a post-secondary credential. This is consistent with Minnesota's 70% attainment goal. Minnesota colleges and universities are looking for solutions to declining enrollment. Offering enrollment to students with intellectual disabilities is, in fact, a solution. Minnesotans with intellectual disabilities are untapped, capable talent for Minnesota organizations and businesses. Credentialed Minnesotans with intellectual disabilities are part of the solution of Minnesota's workforce shortage. Minnesotans with an intellectual disability who go to college experience higher employment rates, earn higher wages, live more independently, and are less reliant on government supports like SSI and vocational rehabilitation. The Technical Assistance Center that's created will provide essential information for students, families, educators, and Minnesota colleges and universities to learn about inclusive higher education and plan for students with an intellectual disability. Today, we are aware of over 30 Minnesota colleges and universities exploring inclusive higher education. The grant funding appropriation addresses the initial funding barrier that colleges and universities face. Thank you to Representative Cleavorn, Representative Davids, and Representative Hansen for co-authoring this specific portion of the bill on a bipartisan basis. We appreciate that inclusive higher education is being prioritized. Thank you.
Thank you. Paulster Fennigan, Rena Valita is next.
Chair Pulaski, committee members, I am Paul Cirkvenik, and I serve as president of the Minnesota Private College Council. Our students and our nonprofit institutions are glad and grateful to see that this bill contains an increase in funding for the Minnesota State Grant Program. In testimonies, in letters, and in individual meetings, committee members have heard from students about the tremendous impact a Minnesota State Grant has on their lives. It makes college affordable and possible for lower income and middle income students, and it helps them stay in college and complete a college degree or certificate. On behalf of our students and our institutions, thank you for using some of the state's budget surplus to increase the state's investment in need-based financial aid. In a time of declining enrollment, especially among lower-income students, this investment is critically needed. We are also grateful to see this bill make investments in several of the Office of Higher Education's programs which serve students, including emergency assistance grants, grants to increase and diversify the K-12 teaching workforce, the Student Parent Support Initiative, and the Direct Admissions Program. We look forward to working with all of you in the coming weeks as this omnibus bill moves through the legislative process. Thank you.
Thank you. Karina's next, and then Chancellor Malfort.
Chair Pulaski, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Karina Valeda, and I am a student at Ivory Hills Community College. I'm the vice president of LEAD UMN, a statewide student association representing Minnesota's 100,000 community and technical college students. As this committee continues its work this session, I urge you to center around real college students like myself. Higher education systems were created in a bygone era, and they're just not working for today's college students. You have heard in this committee the enrollment crisis that these colleges are facing and the skills gap that the employers are facing. But to solve these issues, you must understand the challenges students face in higher education. Just last week, Gallup reported that 44% of associate degree students have considered dropping out of school in the past 6 months. This data mirrors a survey that LEAD UMN did last year. The number one reason students cite for thinking about dropping out is the emotional stress of balancing coursework, their job, and caregiving responsibilities, and I can relate to that. Some mention that emotional stress comes from depression and anxiety. Some others said concerns for the ability to pay for college brought on emotional stress. The survey matched my experience as a single mom as I try to juggle 50-hour work weeks to keep up with my studies. This often leaves me with limited time to spend with my daughter. I have spent countless nights sleepless nights striving for high grades, knowing that my GPA will be a factor in my ability to secure these scholarships, which is the only way that I can afford to go to school. Additionally, I've had to stand in long lines at food banks because the high cost of tuition and textbooks leave me with little money. But I am not the only one struggling. Based on both the Gallup survey and conversation with my peers, it is evident that these challenges are encountered by at least half of these community college students. That is why we appreciate this committee's funding to address student basic needs, to address the food insecurity and mental health. These investments are critical to boosting student retention so that students can complete their degrees and enter the workforce. But as we are going to address the state's workforce challenges in an equitable manner, we must address the fact that college is just not affordable. The same Gallup survey also asked students, adults from 18 to 24 that have never enrolled into post-secondary college programs, why they choose not to. And 81% of those respondents cited the cost of the program. For far too long, the high cost of colleges have prevented many individuals a dream for a better future. I personally have waited many years to pursue my college education because the financial strain it will put on my family and I. I grew up in the shadow of the Capitol in a community where I witnessed many challenges plagued by issues such as drug abuse and gun violence. For many, the possibility of pursuing a college education and escaping this environment has felt like unattainable dream. And I've seen firsthand how the lack of education can prevent people from reaching their full potential. My parents never had the opportunity of going to college, and they did not have the resources to help their children go to college either. But one of my biggest fears is taking on the large amount of student debt. As this committee moves forward, I urge you to support Representative Norris' proposal for the free college program in Minnesota. The Senate heard testimony from Professor Odell from the University of Wisconsin on how the research shows the positive impacts of the free college programs in enrollment to equity and the workforce development. But they also show how the free college programs can promote FAFSA completion, reduce debt burdens, raise students' K-12 performance outcomes, and more. But that's why free college programs are sweeping across the nation and why this Minnesota House supported a free college program last year. This session, you have the opportunity to make a real difference of the lives of many students that are struggling to find a version of their American dream. That is why I urge you to please support the free college proposal offered by the Senate. Thank you.
Thank you. Chancellor, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Pulaski, Vice Chair Walgamart, members of the committee. My name is Devendra Malhotra, and I'm humbled and honored to serve as Chancellor of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Mr. Chair, I want to thank you, members of the committee, and all the outstanding staff that have worked with Minnesota State over the past few months. These are continuing conversations that will definitely spill over to the next biennium, and Minnesota State looks forward to our work with this committee over the longer haul. I was just reminded this morning that I only have 125 days remaining as chancellor. But I assure the committee that I'm going to make every one of them count. My colleagues have heard me say that in our professional lives, we will be judged more on how we exit an organization than how we enter it. My goal from the very beginning was to strengthen our colleges and universities so that they can continue to serve our students and the state of Minnesota. Chair Pulaski, your leadership and your passion for higher education and the work this committee has led to a strong higher education target. The priorities you have set forth in this bill are well aligned to moving our campuses towards a sustainable future. I'm confident that the next chancellor of Minnesota State will appreciate your efforts and will be able to move the colleges and universities forward at all of our 54 campuses. Chair Pulaski, I'm personally grateful for the opportunities to work closely with you. I know that the investments this committee is proposing for Minnesota State, it will enable us to meet the needs of all Minnesotans in every corner of the state. I've listened to a great deal of the committee hearings with a focus on our stressed budgets and the consequences of declining enrollment. We fully understand that these proposed investments in Minnesota State come with the expectation that we work hard to stabilize our campus finances with a strong focus on enrollment. These additional resources in the budget will position us to respond to the critical needs of the students and promote equitable student success and provide Minnesota the talent and workforce it needs. All of these things will also have a positive impact on enrollment growth. In regards to the tuition freeze, this committee has discussed the intent of the legislature and the governor many years ago to put into law the relationship between the state funding and tuition, with state appropriations funding higher education two-thirds and one-third coming from tuition. This bill is a giant leap to move us back to a more fair covenant between students and the taxpayers of Minnesota. For that, we are truly grateful. I've had the great fortune to work in public higher education for over 40 years, and over half of that time was spent in the classroom. I understand where the magic happens, and I also understand how our students and their needs have changed as well. Students rightfully expect our teaching and learning to meet them where they are, and we must embrace that challenge in order to stay relevant and impactful. I would like to say a bit about Minnesota State. I have spent more time working on Minnesota State campuses than I have as chancellor. So my perspective continues to be driven by the campus experience. I believe that Minnesota State's organizational structure is one that we will continue to see other states move towards in the coming years. It is critical to break down the barriers of two-year and four-year campuses, as well as technical and professional education and liberal arts, to make sure we are providing lifelong learning opportunities so our students can adjust and adapt to a rapidly changing world. Minnesota State is fortunate to have a highly functioning governing board led by Chair Roger Moe and trustees that understand who we are and who we serve. We also have strong campus and system leaders and outstanding and passionate faculty and staff who recognize that we are here because of our students and the communities we serve. In closing, as Chancellor, I would like to acknowledge the working relationship we've had with former committee chairs too, Connie Bernardi and Bud Nornes, as well as minority lead Representative Marion O'Neill. I very much appreciate their efforts and leadership in strengthening our system of colleges and universities over the years. Mr. Chair, it has been a delight to work with you over the past several years, and getting to know committee members and learning from your experience and insights. Minnesota State appreciates this proposal and is ready for the work ahead to fulfill its innate potential. Mr. Chair, that concludes my remarks.
Chancellor, upstage us for a minute. Your presentation to the committee in January set a new standard for how a leader of a higher education system should present a budget to this committee. You stayed in the chair for 90 minutes. You never once deflected a question. You never asked staff to help you. You answered all the questions. You made sure this committee understood the problems and the needs of higher education in the Minn State system better than any chancellor that I have seen in my 37 years in this institution. I would hope that others watched you present that we have to understand budgets, and we have to understand budgets from the campus level. Every time this committee made a request, Minn State provided it by campus, sometimes over a 10-year spread, but never longer than a week delay in getting us the information. I can't thank you enough. This bill is as much a testimony to you as to the work of this committee. And I thank you again and again for showing us the way that we should do a higher education bill and the way a higher education system should be led. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Pulaski, and look forward to our work together.
I look forward to it, too. Members, do you have any questions? Representative Cleburne, I saw you reaching for the mic earlier. Yep.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to thank the Chancellor Malhotra for your dedication to your students and dedication to our state. It's been an honor to work with you this period of time when I've served on higher education. But I would also like to extend an offer to you, and that offer is if you want to count your last 125 days like we count legislative days, that might give you 2 years. Thank you, and I wish you the very best in your next chapter.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Claiborne. Much appreciated.
Seeing no other questions, Representative Wogelman, I believe you might have a motion for us, and it would be the last time for the Chancellor to hear it.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the approval of the minutes from Thursday, March 23rd, 2023.
Representative Wogan moves the minutes of March 23rd. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Seeing no other questions from the members or the committee, meeting is adjourned. Thank you.